intersection of good drinks, good music, and good times. This is Hops and Spirits Bar Conversations.
I think I said this once before. Somehow, someway, I managed to get Canadians on this show, and I love it. We've got another great guest for you here in a second, but first, make sure you follow us on all of our social media at Hop Spirits, all one word. And while you're on Facebook, like our group, be part of our group, Country Music and Bourbon, and get keep up with all the cool stuff that we've got going on. But like I said, we got another Canadian on the show tonight. He's a singer-songwriter. His latest single, Rosemary, is out now. It's from his upcoming album, Things Were Never Good If They're Not Good Now, which is coming out this summer. Let's welcome in Donovan Woods.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you hopping on, and, you know, this is called Bar Conversations, but I know you're behaving yourself these days, so I always like to ask a question. What's your favorite drink? What's your go-to drink? You a coffee guy now? What's your favorite thing you like to enjoy?
I'm not sober. Like, I never had a drinking problem, but I don't drink because it never made me feel good, but I will drink in a circumstance where I know it's going to offend other men, which is like, do you know what I mean? Like, everybody's having a good time and I don't want to be a bummer, which is not a good reason to drink, of course. You should allow people to not drink, but I do sort of like, if it's a good time, I don't want to spoil, so I will drink. And when I do that, I'll have like an old fashioned, or I like this is probably embarrassing to admit, I like a Peroni, like an ice cold Peroni or something, you know what I mean? But I'll have an old fashioned or something like that. You know, but only one. And also, it just doesn't make me feel good. Like, it's never made me feel good. The thing I hate about myself is not cured by alcohol in the way that it is with other people, I think. Do you know what I mean?
Well, and I was going to say, I mean, do you get weird looks since you're up in Canada? I mean, I feel like, you know, when you're home, do they go, hey, what's going on?
The people I grew up with are beer drinking fiends. Like, that's what they're doing. You know, they're drinking in people's garages. They drink in each other's garages, standing up, looking at hockey on TV. So I try to fit in. You know what I mean? My story of my life is just trying to fit in. I just want to look like a normal guy. So I'll just fit in. I am very into coffee too.
I was going to say, I think I saw a few on the Instagram where you were just enjoying a sip or two. Now, do you have like the whole coffee set up at your house, or do you just go to Tim Hortons and enjoy it?
No, self-respecting Canadian goes. That's the thing that's like been misconstrued about Tim Hortons. It's like, it's not. You don't go there. Like, you wouldn't go there. You would go there by accident, or like if you're on like the highway and something happened, or like you something bad, like somebody puked in the car, or you might. You know what I mean? It's not a thing that. Like, I mean, we like it, but it's not.
It's more of what we like when we go up there, right?
I know, and I understand that people, and sometimes people from other countries will come and they'll be like, it's really good. And you have to be like, it's not good. It's not good. It's cheap, but it's not good. Like, every sandwich there can fuck off. There's not a good sandwich on the menu. It's not good. Anyway.
I have my own
fairly expansive setup. I do all that. I like weigh it and stuff like a loser. Like, I do all this.
Hey, no, that's how you get it good. And I was going to ask you,
it's all about rushing.
I was going to ask you, you mentioned the sandwich. What's going on with the social media sandwich thing? I've seen it on your profile a few times. Where is that coming from?
Oh, where I'm sitting on a sandwich? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm confused.
Well, that's just a beautiful sandwich that I had in Columbus, Ohio. That I think about quite a bit. I took a picture of it, and for some reason, in the light of the picture that I took, it looked like I took the picture, and the light was streaming in the window of this like breakfast restaurant place. And I was with my friend Adam, and I was like, "Look at this picture I just took of the sandwich." He's like, "I honestly think that's the nicest picture of a sandwich I've ever seen in my entire life." Like, I had no photography skills, but it just looks so good. The light hit it just right. So I just find ways to work it into. Once they came up with that iPhone thing where you can tap on one item and then turn it into a copy paste that one little item. You know how they do that now?
Yeah.
You can do all types of fun things. Like, I'll put like a can of Pringles in the corner of a lot of pictures. Like, so it looks like the person taking the picture is eating Pringles while they're taking it. Just things that bring me just bring me joy, you know.
I like it. I like it. You gotta have fun on the road, right?
That's it. You have to.
Now I noticed tonight, I think you're rocking more of the stash look with the beard.
Yeah.
Is it, do you go back and forth? What do you prefer? What does the wife prefer? Or is it just kind of your mood?
I don't know. She's not interested. I don't think she knows. She doesn't look at me. I can't imagine that she knows what's happening on my face. Yeah, I bet you could ask her right now and she wouldn't know. But I don't, I just, I like what I'm always trying for is like, it looks like a mustache, but there's a bit of a beard too. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I guess, a popular thing now for hip people. But that's what I like. I like a mustache. I do like a mustache. I look a little bit, I don't look good with it, but I would, if I didn't have this job, if I had a job where people didn't look at me, I would absolutely have a mustache. Like if I were an electrician or I like ran the counter at a rental car place or like something, you know, a good normal job, I would definitely have a mustache all the time.
See, my wife tried to get me to have a mustache and I wasn't sure about it.
Oh, your wife wants you to have that?
Apparently. I was confused.
Dude, you should do it. That sounds great. This sounds really exciting, actually, to be honest with you. Whatever she wants, dude. Just do it.
Well, that's true, but it looked weird on me. It made me feel like I was my dad, and that just weirded me out.
You know what's funny about mustaches is that if you think about, like, every generation was joking a bit with them. Do you know what I mean? We think that when we have one, we're joking a bit. It's a bit of a nod. We're saying, like, yeah, I'm doing an old dad thing. But when our dads did that, they were also kind of joking. Like, there was never a generation who wasn't kind of joking about a mustache. Like, everybody was kind of joking about it. You know what I mean?
And now they're cool.
But they're not even cool. It's always kind of a little, like, look at me.
Or at least on that guy. There's, like, one guy that you're like, well, it works for him.
Who was it? It was Magna P.I., probably, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe Tom Selleck.
It probably was, literally.
Now, on social media, you'll occasionally share things, you know, with your family, birthdays, different things, you know, your wife and daughter. How much does family mean to you?
Man, I like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's the biggest thing in my life. I'm just trying to improve as a parent and as a partner all the time. I mean, that's really all I'm trying to do. And I have a job where I'm away a lot. So there's a lot more barriers for me to be a good partner because I'm gone a lot. A lot of times I'm just on the fucking phone. So, you know, it's hard. And kids, they, you know, they need you more as they get older. You think that as they become more, they want you around more. You know, I always thought when they were babies, I actually have three kids. We have three kids. I have two older kids too, but they don't want to be on social media. But they both, which I respect. So I don't post anything about them. But as they got older, they really want you around more. I always thought when they were babies, I was like, this is the worst time to be away is when they're babies. But the worst time to be away is now, really, when they're, you know, they're coming to their own, they want to talk. It's funny, they treat you like dirt, but when you're not there, they want you to be there, you know? And they wish that you were there so that they could treat you like dirt, so they could just pretend like you don't know anything in the world and they know everything. But they want you around more and more. So it's harder and harder. But, yeah, I mean, it's like it's the major thrust of my life is to try to be a better father. And I wasn't good with babies. It was not my forte. I was not good at it. And there were moments where I was like, oh, goodness gracious, what have I gotten myself into? I got better at it by the third baby, but whew, you know what I mean? I like them more and more all the time as they get older and they can talk and we can have conversations and they can to ask me about things they're confused about. I like them more and more and more every year. It's really exciting.
And you're not having to clean them at that point too, hopefully.
Yeah, I have to wash them and, you know, and sometimes you still have to, but you're not having to like, yeah, it's like a little bit less labor intensive, but it's emotionally more intensive. You know what I mean? Do you have kids?
I do. I got a 5-year-old that was trying to push some of our buttons tonight, I think.
Right. Bedtime or what?
Yep, she was doing great, and then I don't know what happened. Bedtime came around, and it all went sideways.
I know, dude. I love it. I love it. You're just like, what did we do? But you didn't do anything. You just like, also the worst thing is that they like holding a giant mirror to you because, especially if there's something that you want to do after they're in bed and they can tell that you're looking forward to it, and they can sense this like minute, just a hint of anxiousness in your wanting to get them to bed, and that's when they push back because they don't know what's going on. They're like, why is this so tense? And they have to, it's, and that's the most frustrating part, like trying to remain a calm blue ocean when you're just stressed out is, oh, I'm the worst parent. I have like something to do at night, like if I have a show at night or something, or I have to fly somewhere at night. In the daytime, I'm the worst. I'm the worst parent. I don't have the patience because I'm just only thinking about the next thing I have to do.
See, I'm always after a long day, I always try to remind myself, breathe. She's not her fault. You had a long day. Sometimes
Yeah.
it's easier said than done.
Oh, dude, it's always hard. It's always hard to stay calm. But you realize so quickly that the only antidote to it is kindness. There's no reason to go like, you can't act like this. There's no reason to meet it with anything but kindness, which is so frustrating because they're so irrational.
Yes. Especially when you're like, wait, that's just me talking back to me. It's my fault.
That's right. It's all my fault. Yeah.
Now, as I mentioned on the top of the show, you're Canadian by trade anyway. You grew up there in Ontario. What impact did that have on you personally, musically, and everything?
I don't know. I don't know that it really did. I guess maybe it did. I don't know. I don't really. I grew up so close to. I grew up right on the border, really. Like we could see America. If it was like. Michigan was like. Literally 15 minutes from my house, so it like you could get across the border quickly, and you did back in those pre-9/11 days. You could go across the border, and you didn't need a passport, and they were like, "What are you doing over here?" You could just be like. Go fuck yourself, and they'd let you in no matter what. It didn't matter. You go get gas. It just nothing mattered. But now they, it was very. It's very tight now, of course. But I don't know. I never really thought of my. Not that I don't think of myself as Canadian. I do, and I do have a real fondness for Canada. And when I'm out of it for a long time, I go, okay, that's enough. I'd like to go back now. But I don't know that it's really like affected me in any real way. I guess it has. I guess maybe we have enough good songwriters that like there are role models to have here. But America does too. I don't know. Everybody does. I don't know.
Maybe is it just putting the do you, now do you call it a toque on your head, the toboggan, the toque?
Call it a two. Do you call it a toboggan in Kentucky?
Well, because in college I had several Canadian friends and roommates, it's a toque to me now, but
Yeah.
before that I didn't know what to really call
Yeah,
it.
toboggan is so, that one is so silly to me. It feels like they just chose, like I understand linguistics, it just happens. But like it feels like they just said another winter word. They wanted to say it when they're just like, what the, it's a toboggan. This feels like a strange
Now,
usage.
how high up can you get that on your head? I saw that
Oh,
video.
I wear the
You were working.
highest. I wear the highest. My toques are, I wish I was wearing one now to show you, but it's like, I go very high. I go like absurdly high. The dream, I like to be in the first class airplane lounge with my toque looking absurd. I want people to wonder what I'm doing in there, that I've taken a wrong turn. I want to look like an. This, it brings me such joy to wear a hat that way. I don't know what. That's part of me is deeply Canadian, I suppose.
Now, do you wear that on stage, or is that a regular hat on stage?
I wear it on stage. I'll do anything. People will go, "Aren't your ears cold? Or is your head cold?" I go, "Shut the fuck up! Don't talk to me." I just, you know, I do whatever I want with hats.
Now, while you said you were right on the border, what music though did you grow up on? What was kind of, and maybe still impacts you to this day?
I mean, like anybody who grew up in the years that I grew up in the '90s, what I listened to was, oh, now you're having a blue drink? You're having like a different two things going on?
I went with a little fun water.
There's a lot of varietals over there. I listened to like Detroit, the radio stations we got were Detroit radio stations. So the first things I liked were like Belle Biv DeVoe and Bobby Brown, and the music I listened to when I was a kid was like hip hop. I didn't listen to folk music. There's no way. It was for losers. I didn't listen to loser music. I listened to cool music for cool guys. So, you know, I listened to Jay-Z and I listened to like Eminem.
So how'd you get into the folk realm then? What happened?
I just started playing a guitar when I was a teenager, and then I just started paying attention to people who did that because I thought, I mean, in all honesty, my sister, who was a great leader for me, was like, you're not much to look at. You should pick up some supplementary skills. You should learn to play the guitar. That'll help you. And she was right. So I did. I took lessons in the guitar. I started writing songs like right away. That's what I knew. I don't know how I knew to do it. And also I thought, oh, I'll be able to do that.
Overly confident.
Yeah, just really overly confident. I didn't write a good one for probably like 15 years. But I did think at the beginning, I was like, oh, this would probably be easy for me. You know, just, I don't know. I just decided to do it. And then by that time, there were people that were in the realm of like, there were folk guys that existed. There was people like, I'm trying to think of who it would have been. Like, people like David Gray started existing, you know what I mean? Like that, where there was something that there was, it was kind of cool. People like Ray LaMontagne started to kind of exist, where there was kind of a hipness to folk music that there wasn't before.
Now, you mentioned, you know, you picked up the guitar at, you know, your sister's behest. I love how she said, you know, you had the looks for the guitar. Hey, I've had people say I've got a face for radio, so I get it.
I think you look great.
Thank you.
You look
great. I was going to say, I appreciate
that.
Now,
I think it's fantastic.
Well, I appreciate that. That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
You know, my wife once told me to change my face, so I needed that.
No. Just get a mustache going for it. Just
get the mustache. Now, you mentioned you kind of grew up on some stuff from Motown and picked up the guitar as a teenager. Did you have like a love though for playing music before that, or did that kind of come in those teenage years when you got the guitar?
I always really loved music a lot. I think like, but everybody does. Doesn't everybody like music a lot? Like people are always like, my kid, because they know I'm a musician, they'll say, my child loves music so much. And I'm like, everybody's kid likes music. Everybody likes it. It's great. Like what would there be to not? I was never obsessed with it. I got obsessed with songwriting when I started to do it. I got obsessed with what it meant to do that, and what was good and what was bad, and language. I've always been really interested in language, and I think that's mostly where what appeals to me about songwriting. Because I'm not a hugely musical person. I don't have a lot of musical knowledge. I'm just taking a lot of theory lessons right now as an adult, and I'm finding it to be really interesting. There's a lot of stuff I did not know, but I think like my way into songwriting was language. I really love language. I like how it works. I love when it's powerful. I want to figure out why it's powerful. And I got super into Bob Dylan, of course. I got very into Paul Simon when I was in my late teens and early 20s. And listening to that, I got super into Joni Mitchell. And then it led me down to, you know, contemporary people like Lucinda Williams and these types of people. And just listening to those songs and trying to figure out why they felt so important, you know, I think that was my way into songwriting. And I still start with language first. Like, I can noodle around and come up with as many chord patterns as I want to. It's nothing until I'm applying language to it, you know.
Well, and I was going to say, you know, obviously you kind of picked up the guitar, went kind of down the rabbit hole maybe as with some songwriting, but when was the idea to give this a shot professionally and go that route?
I'm still not 100% of whether
I'm... We're still down that path.
It's still maybe go back to college for massage therapy or something, maybe. I think, like, I went to take political science in university. I learned very quickly that I thought I'll be a politician, and I learned very quickly that I wasn't smart enough to be in that, or I just didn't like it. And then So I dropped out and I just took English and drama. And then I went to theater school. I got really into acting and things. I loved to do that in university. And then I came out and I thought, oh, I'll try to be an actor. But of course, it's impossible. And I look like how I look, you know. And I did some, I was in some commercials and stuff. And then one day I was just like, I am never going to do this again. I had a bad experience. I don't remember exactly what it was. It was at a commercial audition or something. And I left thinking like, I don't ever want to do this ever again. And I never did it ever again. I have since never done it. And I've never missed it. But I had always been writing songs through all that. I just wasn't like taking it seriously. And I wasn't trying to, because I didn't think they were that good. And I sort of knew they weren't that good. And then as I was getting out of university, I would have been like 22 or 23 or so. I started to think that they were okay, the songs that I was writing. And I had been writing songs for like a decade at that time, 15, almost 12 years. And I started to be like, oh, these are okay. And whether that was like delusion or what, I started to like put them out. And then other people thought that they were good. So that sort of snowballed. And I was like, oh, maybe I can do this. Maybe I could try to do this. But I'd never really thought that I would be a performer who would go on stage. That wasn't really anything that, it still is not the thing that really appeals to me. Just the moment of creation, just making something new, making a new song out of nothing, is the thing that I like. The rest of it, I could take or leave. I've found ways to make it really fun, and I enjoy it all now. But if everybody took it all away and all I got to do was make up songs, I would be perfectly fine with that. I really enjoy that part.
Well, I was gonna say, I mean, when you think about it, when you dropped the album this summer in July, that'll be your seventh studio album. Did you ever think you'd be releasing that many studio albums? Like,
it's so funny. It's like that is funny. Like, it seems like a lot, and it is a lot, I guess. But in all honesty, this really to me is like my fourth, and maybe my third, because like the first one was like, we made the CD cases out of cardboard. I cut them and glued them in my basement apartment. Okay. The second one, we had a real CD manufacturer, but I couldn't afford the shrink wrap of the CDs. So my friend was like, my work has a shrink wrap machine. We'll just do it ourselves. So we shrink wrapped the CDs ourselves and like put stickers on them and stuff. And they looked legit, but we did made them ourselves. And then I dropped them off back to the label that I was working with. And then the third one was sort of like, it was a real CD, kind of, but it wasn't in stores or anything. Like, I don't have it, none exist anymore. But then the fourth one came out in a legitimate way, was in stores and stuff. So that really was the first record, to be perfectly real. So really it's like, I would say this is probably more like my fourth album, fifth album, but you know, seventh, I guess it is seventh.
I was going to say, still though, it's got to be wild to think, you know, putting out new music now and you were making your own CDs, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, but it's only like 85 songs, really. Like, I mean, it's not that many songs. Like, I mean, there are singles in between and stuff. But I think the other day somebody told me how many songs I had released under my own name as an artist. And it was not a lot. I want to say it was like, oh, I want to say it was like 102, which I was like, oh, that's not really that many at all. I feel like it's, you know, compared to the amount that I've written, it's nothing. You know, it's a drop in the bucket. But yeah, it is amazing. I'm at my seventh. But also, it's an industry that's so obsessed with newness that like, whenever I see in the article that it says like his seventh record, I just panic. I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna seem so old. But nobody put any of my songs on the radio until I was like 30. So it's like not really my fault. If you wanted me to be younger, you should have like put me on the radio earlier. It would have really helped me out. I was really broke. It would have really helped me out.
Well, I was gonna say it's wild to see too. I mean, the industry keeps changing, and now almost albums don't even get released half the time. You know, you might be lucky to get an EP out sometimes.
Yeah, I think that is true. And I think also young artists, if they sign off of TikTok, they're lucky to even get, I think they're lucky to get an EP. I think they're releasing just singles until they can get some momentum going. Yeah, I mean, it's a different landscape. Music means a completely different thing to this generation that is young right now. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do with the music industry, because it's a very different commodity to them than it was to us, in an interesting way. And I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens. And I don't think we'll like it, but I think that's the job of old people, is to not like it. So it doesn't matter what they do, it's up to them. But I think old people won't like it, as is the case.
They might have a little get off my lawn type feeling.
I think we probably will, because I think that they like... I mean, just think of it, dude. I mean, like, think about it with your daughter who believes, or you know, my kids who believe that any song ever is should be available to them at any moment. They don't know who pays for the Spotify. And they won't know until they're like 14, until they don't live here, and it isn't on every device that we have. So it's like, it's interesting. And they also think of music as like the background of something else, it feels like. Like, it's just something you put in the background of a video. Or it's like a sound that... It's so interesting. It'll be interesting to see what they do, what they end up with. But I think it'll be a lot different.
I think you're right on that. And, you know, as I mentioned, you're putting out that seventh album. Where does the title, Things Were Never Good If They're Not Good Now, come from? Well, also, was your goal to get as many words on the album as you could?
I like a long title. I like a long title because it's sort of like, I don't know, there's some kind of rudeness in it or something. It's like, just read all this. I like it. It's an affront or something. But, did I mute myself or something? Or did you mute yourself?
I had muted myself. All
right. I thought something happened. You can cut that out. But that's sort of one of the affirmations that I say to myself to sort of try to make myself feel... I don't have a hard time with my own... I have a hard time, like, stating my own needs. I have a hard time being... Like, I think a lot of men do. I have a hard time just existing as a man. I just don't say anything about how I feel about anything until I'm angry. And then I say, you know the feeling.
Mm-hmm. And so I've been there.
To practice sort of... I'll say, oh, I don't like... You know, I'll try to say, like, I don't like this. I don't like this for some reason. I'm trying to figure out what it is. To practice saying when I feel something, this seems like something a toddler would do, but it really is where I have to start. I'll say like, I'm enjoying this. I like this pizza or something like that, which seems very, you know, pedestrian. But even that is hard for me to do that, to be like, I'm having a nice time here on the porch or something like that. It's sort of just like a play on those affirmations that I say to myself. When I say, I'll say big, you know, really hyperbolic affirmations like, this is the greatest ice cream cone I've ever had, just to practice, you know, expressing myself. And one of the ones that I do is, man, things were never good if they are not good now, because this is good. This is real good, you know. So it's one of those.
I like that. It's living in the now. And, you know, I think when Rosemary came out, and, you know, obviously the album... information came out. You said this album serves as, quote, a funeral to the life I was living. Why did the album make you feel that way?
I think, like, I had a hell of a year last year. I mean, the pandemic did that to all of us, I think, to a certain extent. It sort of ground a lot of us down into a different thing. And it did for me, too. I was pretty lucky that I didn't really... my album cycles were timed pretty okay for the pandemic. It wasn't the worst thing for me, but it was still, you know, I mean, we all felt weird, of course. I think in the year after, I was back on the road, I was back touring, and the problems that I had in my life all through, you know, I've been married 2 times. I think, like, the problems that I had in the first relationship were back again in the second relationship. Which you mean, like, you think, oh, this is me, obviously. You know, this is, something's up with me. And I think, like, I realized in the last year that I really wasn't digging to the bottom of myself, even though I would have said that I was. And I'm a guy who's into mental health. I was always doing therapy, but I really wasn't doing it. I was just going through it, you know. I was using it to manage the other people in my life. I wasn't really examining myself. And I think I didn't really, in 2023, certainly I realized it. I don't think I really understood how much I really was unkind to myself all the time, how much I didn't like myself, and how much like shame and guilt I was feeling all the time. And when I started to examine that, I couldn't, for a long stretch, I couldn't write just because I was too mad all the time. And I felt like it was, I just felt like every, I was like, what else is going to fucking happen to me? I was just in this sort of, that sort of mode, you know, what else is it? You know, I don't need any of this shit, you know? And when you start to realize that it's like, what's happening is you got two of you. You're pretending to be this steadfast, strong person for your family because that's what a dad is supposed to be. That's what like a father's supposed to be, because my dad was unflappable, or seemed to me to be. And so that's what I want to be. And then, but inside I feel terrible. And you can't be two people like that. It doesn't, mm-hmm. the road of that goes to ruin. You know what I mean? Like, regardless of whether it ever happens, it's on its way there. I know a lot of people that live that way. And it's hard. It's hard to be those two people. And I was doing that. I was being two people. I wasn't being open about how awful I was feeling about myself. And I think in the last year I figured that out. And I was able to, like, look at that and to learn how to forgive myself for how awful I felt about myself. I mean, those things, like, in therapy, things like, you know, you can't love somebody until you love yourself, which sounds like such trite nonsense. The truth of it is that it is very, very painfully true. And so true that, like, when I realized that it was real and what that actually meant, I was devastated by it. Because I was like, oh, this is why. This is why people can't quite love me the way I want them to. Because I don't like myself enough. And I went through that in the last year, and I'm still going through, still trying to state my needs, as you can see from me saying, I'm enjoying this pizza. But, like, I'm still working towards being open and honest about myself all the time, but I find it very difficult. So I do feel like this is the first album that I wrote where I was sort of digging all the way to the bottom of myself instead of just living in this world where all this stuff is happening to me, as opposed to, what am I doing to cause all this stuff, you know?
Well, I was going to say, your first single is Rosemary from the album. Why that song, and what does that song mean to you?
That song is returning from a tour to my wife, having been on the brink of, you know, feeling like maybe it wasn't going to work out between us when I was away, feeling like maybe that was the end of us, and coming back and saying, okay, can you do it? Can you still love me even though you know everything you know about me, even though I've done the things that I've done, can you still love me? That's sort of what the song is about to me. But it's kind of about the length of a marriage too. It's about like how long it can hopefully be, you know? I think when you talk to people, I'm sure that you've talked to people who have been married for 50 years or whatever, and they go, their advice is always like, it's not gonna always be good. They all say that. They're like, it's all ebbs and flows. And when you're a young married person, you're like, yeah, okay, it's ebbs and flows. Sometimes you'll be mad about what movie to watch. But no, they're talking about sometimes you will fucking want to get divorced. Like, there are times when you feel like this might not work. But you come back and you go through periods that are good and periods that are bad. And I think, like, it's about that. It's about realizing that that's not just lip service that's paid to you by old people who've been married for 45 years. There's like a real truth in that, and you have to do that. Put in the work and do it if you're going to stay together with someone that you love.
Well, no, I was going to say, it's a really cool song, and the album, you know, you got to work with some cool people, a lot of friends on it. What was it like to kind of have that, you know, for this album?
I love collaborating. I love writing with people. I love all of that stuff. I think, like, very rarely are really good things made by one person alone. I don't think that really happens that often. I think collaboration to music, anyway, is the sort of living, breathing life of it. And I love it. I love it. I love to have all those people. I don't have to answer very many questions to people when we're recording a song. Nobody says, like, Wait, what are you so sad about? They just buy in and they understand that it's important to me and they pitch themselves into it, you know. But I love it. I always love it. I love making a thing. Making a new thing, like when there's nothing and then suddenly there's this record. It's the best. It must be how it feels to make a deck. I don't know. I never built one, but it's like it must be great. Like when suddenly there's a deck, it must be great. And then you have a nice drink on it. This fucking wonderful.
I was gonna say you get to put the album on and just listen, sit back and listen and have a drink. Nothing wrong with that either.
And then you got it. You feel like you got it. You feel like you, there's a feeling that you're trying to capture, and then you got it. And then you can go, okay, next thing, next thing. I got that, next thing. Which is a good feeling in life to have sort of, like these earmarks of a time period, and then you can go, okay, now we can move past that, you know?
Well, and like I said, you're working with some cool people. You got a couple features on the album, and what can folks expect from this album when it does drop this summer?
I mean, it's funny that it's coming out in July. It doesn't really feel like. I think that all my music is being for the autumn, but I guess it will be autumn eventually. It's the most personal record I've ever made. It's got the most songs that I wrote totally alone on it. I think the first six songs on the record I wrote by myself. It's a really personal record, and I have not shied away from making, being trying to leave jokes in the songs. And I don't mean jokes like why did the chicken cross the road or whatever. I mean like there is humor. I try to find humor and leave it in the songs, without it being schlocky or
Kind
anything.
of, yeah, hokey or yeah.
And I try to write about the things that I want to hear in songs, which is like friendship and love and just like what it's like to be alive, why it feels so weird to be alive, you know what I mean? I think friendship is a great thing to write about. I tried to write about it a lot on this record. I don't think people write enough about friendship. And I think that we are a bit like we have allowed friendship to take kind of like a back seat to romantic love in our modern life or something. We don't really honor friendship the way that, like, if you read the letters between like old time, if you read the letters of like artists that were friends, like Van Gogh and I forget the guy, is it not like Van Gogh and his art dealer? They're like, I'm empty here without you, brother. They're like they love each other. They're like they are their love for each other is like they profess it in these letters. They're like, I cannot wait to see you. Your face will mean so much to me. I can't wait to be with you and having a good time. I think we sort of have lost our way in terms of honoring our friendships.
I was gonna say, when you were saying that, I was thinking that makes a ton of sense. And you talk about being so honest in your songwriting. What's it like to kind of put yourself out there like that and put those lyrics, from your head to paper and then, out to the world?
I think it's a good feeling. I think like art is a great place to do it. You get like a little bit of a buffer. In art, you're allowed to sort of be a little bit self-indulgent, and you're allowed to sort of broadcast your inner world. I think all, and also I think like it's useful to have that for people. I know that a lot of, I mean, even myself when I was younger, didn't have an inner life where I was thinking about things or where I was processing the way I was feeling. I was only just reactive. If I felt mad, I was angry. If I felt sad, I was angry. If I felt heartbroken, I was angry. Do you know what I mean? I reacted in the way that boys react. I think like offering somebody an opportunity to, just like a window to someone's internal life, gives you permission to maybe do it yourself. And I think that's what all art is useful for. I think music is really useful for it. And also, I think music is just like, it should just make you feel cool. You know, there's nothing better than feeling cool. It's like the coolest thing to feel. It's the only good thing.
Well, and you talk about, how you put out some albums and some singles in between. One of my favorite songs you released recently was How Good. You've also got I'm Around. What's it like to kind of throw those things out there in between an album and And those just kind of live on their own.
I love doing that. I love to have a couple, like, not that those are like crazy outliers or anything, but they didn't really feel like a part of the record, and they're on the record as bonus tracks, but they just, for some reason, and you can't even really explain it, and honestly, if you put them on there, I don't think anyone else in the world would notice a difference in tone or anything. I think everybody, nobody would give a shit. People are just hearing your voice and they're going, "That's him." But there was just something about them where I just couldn't quite. You just have to trust your instinct on that. I couldn't quite make them fit in that record. So they've become like singles beforehand, and they get to stand on their own in an interesting way. I usually have like a couple of those between albums. Just sort of like, and just pushing a little bit, seeing what else I can get away with and have people enjoy my voice, you know. I think that's like, I think it's probably confusing to some people. I've done some sort of strange genre things, but I just really like making songs up, you know what I mean?
Well,
So.
I was gonna say you're on the dance pop track. When this is over, you're on Iowa. When you're featuring on some interesting tracks, what made you kind of go maybe a little different than what people are used to?
Well, that was the Dabin track, that When This Is Over track, was that he reached out and asked if I wanted to sing on something, and then he sent me a bunch of stuff and I wrote to that track, and then he edited my melodies and made them less, you know, like folky and weird, made them a bit like, you know, more suited towards EDM. And I was so, I remember when I got, he was like, "Why don't you sing this instead?" And he would play it on a piano, and he's a really musically talented dude, and I was like, kind of, "Oh, well, this is not gonna be good." And then I listened, he improved every single melody I wrote. He like was obviously very good. And I was like, "Well, he's right that time." And then I listened to the next one. And I was like, "Well, he's right again, I guess." But you know, it was. I love being a part of it. I love being a part of it. I love trying to sing like that. It's hard for me to sing loud. I don't. I have some physical aversion to it. And then the Iowa one was just like I wanted to. I don't know if you've ever seen. Do you know Aoife O'Donovan's work? She was in a group called the Goat Rodeos. Well, she like participated in. There was this Goat Rodeo sessions with this Chris Teely. Do you know Chris Teely, the mandolin guy? And then Yo-Yo Ma was in it. And then Edgar Meyer, who plays the bass. And then another guy whose name I can never remember, but he's also very famous to musicians. But they are like a quartet thing. And Aoife sang with them on a couple of songs on the record. And I watched Aoife sing a song called "Here in Heaven," "Here and Heaven," on The Tonight Show when Jay Leno was the host of The Tonight Show. And I was like, I want to write a song to sing with her. Well, it's like that woman who just did that. I would like to write a song that she sings harmony on the entire time. And eventually, like, there was some opportunity that I think she knew, we found out that she knew who I was or something, and I was like, just leaped at the opportunity. I was like, "Okay, well, do you
You're
want to
like,
make a
wait,
song?"
what?
Yeah, I was blown away by it. So I sent her a bunch of ideas, and my first ideas, I was so scared to send her ideas. I sent her a bunch of little ideas, and she didn't like any of them. And then she sent me an idea, and it was too. I was just like, I'm not smart enough to write on this, like. And then eventually, I stumbled upon what was the first verse of that Iowa song, and I sent that to her, and she sent back a chorus like immediately. And I was like, "This is it. This is the song." And it, yeah. I think of all, if I'm pressed, I think that is maybe my favorite song that I've been part of. There's something about the feeling of that song that I can't get enough of. I think it's like such an interesting mood, you know.
I was gonna say it's a cool song, and it's kind of neat to see you kind of do some things that are maybe a little different from what people were expect from you. And you're about to hit the spring summer season, going on a tour with Drew Holcomb. What's that like to go out and then go out with him and his crew?
Oh, it's cool. I mean, I know Drew. I've written with Drew one time. I hung out with him one time. I don't know his band yet, although I've spoken with one of the fellas. I mean, you just try to fit in. When you're the opener, you just like, just fit in. I just like, I'm good at it. I'm good at fitting in. I won't be irritating or, you know, when you're the opener, you just like, you get to the venue and you just sort of like get the fuck out of the way. You just sort of disappear until it's your time to do your little sound check. Then you do your little 10-minute sound check, and then you go play. You know, you're not the most important thing going, so you got to find time to do your things, and basically you just got to stay out of the way. But I love opening. And I love meeting and getting a sense of what their audience will be like. You'll get like, even on the first night, you'd be like, oh, it's these type of people. It's like this type of fan. It's this type of person. And you can learn to, you know, tailor your set to what you think they're going to like. And it's a really fun journey. And you get to like, you just get to meet a lot of people and you get to experience what life is like for another act. It's really fun.
I was going to say, you got to go on tour with Gaslight Anthem there for a while. That had to be a fun trip.
Yeah, it was so fun. I was worried. You know, they're a pretty intense act. They're like a rock band, a legit rock band who is like loud and it fucking rules every night. It's pretty intense. And I thought, like, will they not like me? It's basically what I felt.
This folk guy with the guitar just strumming along.
I wondered whether they will not enjoy me. And I asked Brian, I was like, do you think they will hate this? Or what do you think? Because it wasn't just me opening. It was a ska band for an hour. And then me, or for a ska band for a half hour, or 40 minutes. And then me for 40 minutes. And then the Gaslight Anthem. So I was like, well, I don't know if I would like that. But Brian was like, they'll like you, trust me. And he was right. He knew his audience. He knows those people, and he was absolutely right. They were on board, and they were really generous and really quiet, and it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
And I'm always curious to ask this question because I find it fascinating. Depending on, you know, who I'm talking to, what their answer is. What's your favorite song to perform on stage these days? Is it one of yours? Is it someone else's? Because I know some people, there's just maybe this one random song or something that just, for whatever reason, they've always loved how it was written. Or
I always wrote it. I don't really do that many covers just because, like, I worry when they're so, like, the covers that I do would be so good, they would make my song seem so shitty. I just, like, I don't do it that much. But I, there are songs of mine that I really love to play. There are songs that I know... I know how to play them in a way that's gonna make them hold. You know what I mean? Like you learn how to, when you're playing alone as a solo act, certainly, you sort of learn how to hold a room. And you don't do it by being loud. You don't do it by, it's counterintuitive. You don't do it by like grabbing people's attention. Because you know that when you grab someone's attention, it goes away very quickly. You want to like gather up someone's attention really gently. So there are a few songs in the set. There's a song I have called Seeing Other People that I will often start solo sets with. And there's some sort of slight ramping that I can do with that song where I can draw people in and sort of teach them what it's going to be like, you know. And it's sort of an interesting introduction to me. And then by the end of it, they go, oh, okay, this is not going to be horrible. This will be okay, you know.
Which is we can sit through this.
An opening act, it's all you want. You want to go like, can I ignore this or what can I do? And if it's, you have to know immediately or you feel uncomfortable. I just want to let people know it's going to be totally fine. And I can do it with that song. So I do enjoy doing that. Yeah.
I was going to say, how awkward is it to sometimes just be you walk up, you know, and it's just you, you're opening for someone and it's just like, please let them like me.
I mean, I've had my share of like, every once in a while you get one where sometimes you'll enter a room like where you're going to do the show, like a concert hall or wherever, and you can just tell by the layout, you're like, oh, I'm not going to work in this room. I don't know what it is, you just know by the layout. There's like weird bars in the corners, there's like, you just can tell. And every once in a while that happens and you go, oh, I'm going to get talked through this whole set or whatever. But you can still gather up 300, 400 people who are listening and you just got to focus on those people. But it's never a good feeling. But it still happens. You know what I mean? It still happens. But, yeah, I mean, it can be an uncomfortable feeling. I did a bunch of opening dates for Katie Lang. You know the singer Katie Lang? She's like a Canadian country crooner. But... she is a gay woman and her following in Canada is like, it's like a lot of gay women. It's a lot of gay women. It's a lot of women who are there and a lot of people who love Katie Lang and who are there to see Katie Lang. And I wasn't on the ticket and they didn't let me be on the stage. So I walked out in front of the curtain and played like I was in like a 6 foot space in front of the curtain and played my things. And it was such a thrill to walk out to an audience who, one, wasn't expecting there to be anybody else on the bill, and two, doesn't want to fucking hear. Is not interested. Like,
not expecting the bearded guy with the mustache.
Actually, me to come out. Like, this is not. It's like, this is not a night for you, my friend. And just reveling in that, and then being able to win people over is like, God, it's such a joy. It's so, but you have to be very willing to fail, because you might very well do that. But failure is like, I don't know, it's pretty fun at this point. It's like when you get, you know, like, have you ever been beaten up? After you get beat up for the first time, you're like, ah, it wasn't so bad. I don't know why. I'm so scared of, like, it doesn't really hurt that much. You just, like, fall on the ground, so what?
I was going to say, you just get right back up, and you move on to the next thing. And
you laugh about it with your friends, and it's a bonding experience. It's great.
And, yeah, like I said, you got the album coming. The first single off of it's out now, Rosemary. Highly recommend that. What else can folks expect from you this year? And you know, anything fun you can let us in on that doesn't get you in trouble?
Well, I got this record, and then it's like I'm on the road. I'm on, you know, I'm doing this, and then we're announcing Australia soon. I'm doing Australia, and we hope we're going to do all of Canada eventually here on this year, and then hope to do the UK. So, I mean, I'm just going around with this record. And I'm already, like, I would say I'm 4 songs into the next one. So I'm trying to not make there be such a big gap before the next one. There was a big gap between these two, just for music business reasons. I don't want there to be that big of a gap between this one and the next one. I'd like to have the next one next year.
Just, you know, then get number 8 or 5 or 4, however you want to look at it, right?
Yeah, maybe I'll be my first one again. Who knows?
Donovan, man, this has been a ton of fun, and I appreciate you sharing some stories with me and talking the album, and cheers, man.
No, thanks. I appreciate it, man. Thanks very much. It was a lot of fun.
Find more from Hops and Spirits at hopspirits.com.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.